This year we'll probably exceed 70% of our employees involved in either giving or volunteering.
Philadelphia's a city of relationships,
and a lot of Philadelphia runs on who your people are and what networks you're in.
It goes to show, like, listening. If we didn't listen and pay attention and then take the initiative to fund a little bit differently, outside of the box of how we might traditionally do it, you wouldn't have had that type of result.
He's not lying. You know, the minute I was hired into this role, he was on the phone saying, "What do you need? We're here to make you successful."
Welcome, Jenny and AJ.
Great to be here.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for joining. This is actually my first visit to Philly. And so I'd love to learn a little bit about what each of you thinks makes this city great, and also what some of the community's needs are.
Great. Well, I'll jump in. First, Sona, so great to be in conversation with you. We often cross paths at various CSR conferences and circuits, so it's great to have this long-form conversation today on some key important issues. So I'll say at the start, while I didn't grow up here in the city, I've lived here and I've worked here and I've made this my adopted city my entire career. So I really love this city, as I know my good friend Jenny does as well. And what I'll say first, I think everyone, when you think of Philadelphia, you think of the rich history and signing of the Declaration of Independence, but it's a very vibrant and resilient city, a real sense of pride for folks who've grown up here and are here and have made it their home. It's also a top destination for millennials. And we say also we're a big hub for eds and meds, right? One of the biggest hubs for education institutions and colleges and universities, as well as health systems. So those are the pluses. I think the challenge, and one of the monikers that we often hear, which always makes me cringe, it's one of the poorest big cities in America. So there is a big dichotomy that we experience in the city. One of the biggest challenges, as you asked, I'd say, is around economic mobility. You know, the study that was just released recently by Dr. Raj Chetty at Harvard University that found that Philadelphia was 50 out of 50 in terms of economic mobility. And we know there's lots of issues that contribute to that. I think the good news, the bright spot, is there's now a coalition of folks that are coming together to address that. There's no doubt, based on the resiliency and grit of the city, that we'll address it. Mm-hmm. Today, we'll focus on one of the key backbone organizations that's doing an issue that's really critical to addressing this around early literacy. We know that's a key issue to address economic mobility, and happy to have my good friend Jenny here to talk about some of the ways that we've partnered to address that important issue in the city.
Can't wait to get into it. I'm also really pleased to be here, Sona. Thank you for having us both. I would answer the question similarly to AJ, but I think the thing that people need to know about Philadelphia is we are a city of neighborhoods. And each neighborhood has its own vibrant, amazing history, and you can keep discovering different corners of Philadelphia, even if you've lived here your whole life. And I love that about the city. I think the level of pride that Philadelphians have in their city is palpable, and there's an energy that comes from that. And I would have said, we didn't even rehearse this, but I would have said the exact same thing about our challenge being economic mobility, because the opportunities are great, but sometimes the access to those opportunities just seems insurmountable to many of the communities that I work with. And I want to see Philadelphia be that world-class city that I know it is, and I want the rest of the world to know how fabulous the city is. And that's going to take working with communities and getting folks access to the opportunities that can exist.
Yeah, you can really feel that energy of resilience, like it's got grit and survivorship in it. It feels like that as you're just driving through the city. So I can feel that. Jenny, you've been at the Free Library of Philadelphia Foundation now for a little over 9 years. So I'm curious about what actually prompted you to first get involved and what you've learned about early childhood literacy since being there, which, you know, AJ touched on as being kind of a critical factor to economic mobility.
Sure. Well, I've had the privilege of working in nonprofit education initiatives in Philadelphia for decades now, and I've worked on kind of all angles of them. Prior to coming to the foundation, I had worked on an initiative citywide to reduce the dropout rate. And that was another initiative that brought together multiple partners from different sectors of the city. And we did a lot of amazing work. But you also always had a sense that you were coming in a little late. While I don't think you'll ever fully get rid of the dropout issue as something we need to plan for and have initiatives around, you can reduce the number of children who can be at risk for dropping out if you get involved earlier. And so I was beginning to have real interest, in starting to intervene in middle school and elementary school, when the opportunity to lead Read by Fourth popped up, I said, oh, this is it. This is my chance to get involved there. So that's really how I came to it, from kind of looking at education from different angles and not having touched the early literacy angle yet.
And I was struck, we were having a conversation before this, and you were saying, I just knew that that was where I needed to be. Is that part of it? It was just that you wanted to get earlier interventions?
That's part of it, but it's also, and I don't know how many other people out there find this part interesting, but I'm someone who truly loves to bring together multiple partners around one of those big, hairy, audacious problems. And the Read by Fourth was exactly that. You know, we have a literacy crisis in Philadelphia where 2/3 of the children in the city were not reading on grade level, which is a critical marker for going forward in education. We know that children who are not reading on grade level at that point in time are 6 times less likely to graduate high school on time, which means they're less likely to connect to a post-secondary credential, less likely ultimately to get a family-sustaining wage, right? So you know early on that that's something we have to shift. But we also know that that's not a problem that can only be solved by schools. So you need to bring together multiple partners. And that's what I love to do in my career. And I've done it in a number of different initiatives. I like to look at a problem at a population and systemic level. And there aren't many jobs out there where you get to be involved at that level. And so when I saw this was about early education, and so I could get involved early, and it was a process that I love, it was just meant to be my job.
That's perfect. AJ, I'd love for you to share a little bit about why and how you got involved in the Reading by Fourth program, which you also mentioned to me earlier is a national program.
It is. It's tied to the Campaign for Grade Level Reading. So we know this is an issue that's not just here in the city of Philadelphia, but it's in cities all across the country. And so for a number of years, I've had the pleasure as a philanthropic practitioner to work and support those activities. I know we chatted before this conversation that I had the pleasure, actually in a previous role, to work with Jenny when she was hired into the role. And again, she's done an amazing job bringing everyone together and driving some amazing results we'll talk about. From a Vanguard perspective, I'd say one thing I'll just share in terms of background that, you know, we're one of the leading investment management companies offering investments advice. But I think the thing that's critical to this conversation is that we're a mission-driven organization, and we take a long-term approach, both in terms of our investments and our community investments. And we know that one of the best ways to drive long-term impact in any community, certainly in the city of Philadelphia, is investing in those early years, those 0 to 5 years around early literacy. So we've made a long-term bet in that particular area. We have a program called Strong Start for Kids. We're in year 8, where we've really had some real measurable impact. And again, working with organizations and leaders that are on the ground that are really doing the work and driving key results. And so we're proud to be one of the leading supporters, one of the early supporters, right, of the campaign.
Yep.
And we'll talk about today ways that it's been more than just, checkbook philanthropy. We've really tried to leverage all of our different philanthropic and non-philanthropic ways to support the work and to make sure that we sustain that success that the campaign has had for the last several years.
And so, AJ, actually, let's go there. So you've been in philanthropy, for your entire career. And so I'm curious about your approach or Vanguard's approach to these types of partnerships and how this concept of a relationship mindset developed.
Yeah, and it's such an important question because, you know, Sona, too often in our field as practitioners, sometimes you do take that transactional approach. We do the opposite. We take a long-term approach. And again, it's about developing partnerships and taking the time to get to know partners, what the needs are, and also being humble. I think one of the things we really pride ourselves on is a lot of humility, listening and learning, taking a listening and learning posture, and really striving to ensure that we incorporate the community voice, knowing that even though we're a big company with lots of resources, we certainly are not on the ground in communities, in neighborhoods, where residents often know what's in their best interest. It's important to listen to those voices, and it's important to shape your philanthropy to address the voices of the community and make sure they have resources on the ground to drive impact. And that's what we've done through this partnership.
I'm just going to pull a thread if it's okay,
yeah.
AJ. How much of this is Vanguard's approach And how much of this is just your personal experience in philanthropy?
Yeah, well, I think the beauty is when both come together, and that's the case here. I started, you talked about your career, I started as a social worker for a Head Start program. So I saw early on working with families and kids when they first come in and how important child issues around child care were. And I worked as an organizer in around education issues and bringing people, folks together, which is why I think I really can relate to the work that Jenny has done throughout her career. And so when I shifted over to the corporate sector, it was important to find a values aligned organization and company. So it was great to have the ability to come to Vanguard. Again, when you look at the business, focused on long-term, focused on, we have a kind of moniker, this three words, it's about clients, it's about crew, our employees, and community. And you see that throughout the campus that you're on today, and people really believe it. And if there's three things they know, that's what they say. And so it definitely aligns with my values. And I think what I've tried to bring in, how we've evolved the work, is we're calling an impact multiplier approach. So we often start with philanthropy, long-term grants to drive impact, but it doesn't stop there. We incorporate traditional volunteerism, we incorporate skills-based volunteerism, and there's some great examples we can talk about today. Board membership, social capital.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's,
I think, Jenny, I,
we social capital chatting. All the time.
I mean, sometimes the ability to open up as a company, or an individual, your own personal professional network, to bring others to the table, other companies that are like-minded and values aligned and mission driven, or just help folks network in the city. I remember you had a great network, but I think there was an opportunity in terms of like the business community. So one of the first things we did before we wrote a check was to connect you into the city, and you then in turn got folks inspired, yep, and involved. That kind of social capital investment is as important, sometimes more important than what you can do just in terms of philanthropy as an individual company.
I think that is just so powerful to hear you thinking about firing on, you know, so many cylinders. I think in the world that we're living in, where it's there's so many pressures on us, there's time constraints. It's like a world where we're doing a lot of things, but not a lot of things deeply. It's actually really refreshing to hear this concept of going deep, going long. It feels like oxygen. But Jenny, tell me a bit about how the relationship has actually worked from your vantage point.
It's been the best relationship I've ever had with a funder. And, you know, I don't say that just to pat AJ's back. I really mean that. He's not lying. You know, the minute I was hired into this role, he was on the phone saying, "What do you need? We're here to make you successful." And he took me to events. He suggested places I need to be. He introduced me to people around town. You know, and someone once said to me, it's not who you know, it's who introduced you to who you know. And I think that is true, right? It's different for me to email someone and say, "Can I come meet with you? I'd like to talk to you about this incredible initiative we're doing to increase literacy." But, oh, AJ's introducing you. I know AJ. I trust AJ. You know, Philadelphia, we're talking about Philadelphia. Philadelphia is a city of relationships. And a lot of Philadelphia runs on who your people are and what networks you're in. And so having a funder who was introducing me and opening those doors and kind of giving me the good housekeeping seal of approval and, the, you know, Jenny's good people doing good things meant everything in terms of kickstarting the work. So we've had a relationship that's been much more of a partnership than a funder-grantee relationship from day one. There have been multiple times throughout Read by Fourth's trajectory where I've called AJ and said, "I'm stuck. Like, I don't know what to do about this." And it has nothing to do with how to get funding. It was more of a kind of political small p, I don't know how to maneuver next. And, you know, AJ was one of the people I could call and he would think through it with me, right? And to be able to be that transparent with a funder about what the challenges are in front of you and know that your funding wasn't at risk if you were being vulnerable was critical.
Yeah, and I want to pick up on that thread, Sona, because I think that's important in philanthropy. Sometimes you can't, what gets in the way of positive change and impact is that power dynamic that exists, right? And you don't want to be vulnerable or feel like you don't have the answer to something because that could, next cycle I might get lose dollars for this important issue, so I'll just keep it to myself. Well, real partnership and relationship building, is about that vulnerability on both sides, because none of us has like the golden answer.
Like, AJ, but, you ought to be funding this way.
Yeah, well, and I'll give an example. Maybe we could just share a good example. And I thought, just top of mind, because as we were walking in to have this conversation, you saw the boxes related for Fathers Read 365. Yep. So a good example of, again, relationship-based philanthropy and listening to folks on the ground. So this is an organization that is part of the Read by Fourth Coalition called Fathers Read 365. It was really a remarkable story. Two African-American men who went to Temple here in the city of Philadelphia together. They played football. One had dyslexia. They both were passionate about early literacy. And so they started a nonprofit organization, small but mighty. And they go to early childhood centers and they do this whole kind of like, they inspire kids and then they send home books and create home libraries. And it's really phenomenal, but they were always kind of stuck, because a lot of times we talk about supporting diverse small grassroots organizations, but then funders will say, well, we'll fund it at $5,000 or $10,000, and then the larger institutions get the big dollars. We took an opposite approach, and we heard from, you know, from Jenny and say, can you look to partner with this group? And there was another funder that we work with that recommended them. So we made a pretty sizable investment, one of their largest investments for general operating support. But more importantly, there were things they needed that a lot of funders wouldn't kind of bring to the table. One was they were creating these home libraries and out of their car. They had these books that, like, so it's literally limiting their ability to scale. And they said, what we really need is, we need a like a mini bus. And so we funded the dad mobile. It was, so they literally go around the city and they have this branded dad mobile where they can really take all these, and they've created thousands of home libraries as a result of that. Then they came and said, I said, what do you really need beyond that, even beyond money? So, well, you know, we came up with our own logo. We need new branding. And so we work with our marketing department, pretty big brand marketing department here at Vanguard, to create new brand logos. They have a goal of like reaching 1 million+ dads and on their YouTube channel.
Yep.
So I think a lot of our philanthropy wasn't what we may have thought they needed. We didn't make any assumptions. We listened, we learned, and then we shaped our philanthropy based on the conversation with this particular organization and Jenny to support, and as a result it's gotten, again, great outcomes. So but that takes time and it takes discipline, and it means that you have to be really focused over the long term to understand the needs and the complexity of those needs, and then provide the funding and other resources to drive the impact.
Well, and I can give you another really great example of that AJ and his team, wasn't just AJ, it was his entire team, but one of the challenges that I called them about was even more grassroots than the Fathers Read 365. We have hundreds of volunteers that are out there doing literacy work to support the goals of Read by Fourth. And these are passionate neighborhood folks who will then call me up and say, Jenny, I need $500 because I want to have a book swap on our block. Or I want to bring all the parents together for a dinner party to talk about how to read to your kids at night, but I can't buy the food. I just need like $200 to get some roasted chickens for everybody. I'm like, okay, but we didn't have a pot of money where we could be giving out money to individuals. And they can't access foundations. And they can't go to a Vanguard and ask for a grant for $500, you know. So I came to Vanguard and I said, how do we do this? How do we get money to grassroots individuals who know what they need to do in their community? And Read by Fourth is really all about starting a movement around early literacy. And if we're starting a movement, a social movement, where we're really trying to change culture, then we need to make it easy for individuals to take action. And that often means resources. And so after, honestly, it probably took 9 months back and forth of me kind of talking through the various issues around this. And there are a lot of issues. You know, you give an individual a check for $1,000, it gets counted as income for that individual, right? And so we had to figure out ways around that, you know, all sorts of things. But Vanguard stepped up and said, all right, Jenny, you've got enough here that you and Read by Fourth need some resources to actually figure this out. And so they just, without us asking, increased our grant by $75,000 and said, start the Neighborhood Literacy Fund, figure it out. We are now in our fourth round of grant making to individuals in the city because of that. And so Vanguard's dollars that could never from Vanguard's office get to individuals are getting to individuals through this participatory grant-making process that they helped us figure out. We've given over $80,000 in 207 different grants.
Yeah, and I was recalling, so one, I'll say I certainly credit the team because that particular initiative happened before I had the opportunity.
I was trying to give you credit.
But I think that is another great example. But what I did get to experience recently, and I know you were there, was a celebration. So we, after like the third or fourth round, we had it folks from the community come and talk about what it meant. And sometimes, again, it's just a little bit, a few dollars, $2,000 grant, and how they really leveraged that to inspire a whole neighborhood and community. And they talked about the impact. It was kind of emotional.
Yeah.
People were tearing up to hear about that. But it goes to show, like, listening, if we didn't listen and pay attention and then take the initiative to fund a little bit differently outside of the box of how we might traditionally do it, you wouldn't have had that type of result or impact right on the ground that we heard at that.
I mean, so many funders put restrictions on the grants, like there's no re-granting, right? Which I get why that's there. But that's what we needed to do. We needed to be able to re-grant some dollars.
I'm so struck. There's so many incredible threads in here, you know, starting from being vulnerable, Jenny. And I think you're exactly right, AJ. Like that actually is what forms trust in a relationship, because we all know no one knows everything. And so when someone acts like it, actually the trust is is not always there. But when they're like willing to be like, I'm stuck, it's like, okay, I trust this person because, you know, they're human, and the humility of that, right? But then I think I'm just listening to and thinking about, like, you are funding people who are making change. Like I am getting emotional just here. I'm leaning in because I'm so struck by this concept. And we talk about this at Benevity all the time, which is, you know, corporate philanthropy is really good at moving the needle on social issues. It can be very directed. It can be very specific. It can be very data driven. But if we want cultural change, we need people to feel a sense of efficacy when they go into their, you know, into their communities and feel like they can actually make a difference. And that's what you're fueling. So it just, was it risky, AJ, to make that decision to fund that program?
No, I think it's.
I know you said it was.
It depends on what values you're grounded on, and if your values are truly long-term, community-centered, relationship-based, you know, equity-driven, all those values, then it becomes easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can even, you know, we have our foundation board, which is a subset of the most senior leaders we have. These folks who built the company and maintain the growth of this amazing company. But they understand that this are the values that drive our philanthropy that you're hearing about today are very similar as an extension of our mission as a company. So in that, you have that mission alignment at the company level, in terms of philanthropy, and it is truly community-centered, it becomes easier. And I don't even see it as a risk. I see it as a huge opportunity, because especially if no one else is funding something like that, then why not? You know, and that's part of the type of philanthropy we want to do, is we want others to just feel like more open to, sure, you could fund, you need to fund backbone organizations like in this case, Read by Forth, and all the traditional ways, but you also do have to invest in leaders on the ground and in grassroots ideas that we know, if supported, will generate great results.
Well, in the same way we fund innovation, you know, in the private sector, we should be actually taking risks and experimenting and trying new things, because if we can crack the nut on some of these problems, I mean, it's a massive boon to the world. So, And it sets precedent for other people to be picking that up and doing more.
So AJ has mentioned a couple times the funding, the backbone. We haven't really talked about what the backbone is. If you wouldn't mind, I wouldn't mind. And I think that's another risk that Vanguard has not seen as a risk, but some funders do. See, funders want to fund, usually, the direct service. They want to know, if you're funding a literacy program, how many kids are you tutoring? How many books were distributed? That real tangible pull at the heartstrings. But when you're trying to make cultural and systemic shifts, like at a population level, this idea of funding a backbone whose job it is to make all those direct service organizations better at what they do and make the ecosystem healthier and stronger and more resilient and able to serve better, that entity needs to be funded and can amplify the other grants that Vanguard is giving. So Vanguard probably funds, I don't know, I'm going to make up this percentage, but at least a quarter of the partner organizations that are part of the Read by Fourth initiative, and then funds us as the backbone. And the value add there for Vanguard and their other investments is that we can provide kind of direct service to those other organizations. So not just are we helping the Neighborhood Literacy Fund grantees get grassroots dollars, but we provide a lot of storytelling and marketing and communications expertise to the other grantees that don't have large enough budgets to do that. We have someone on our staff who's photographing and blogging and social media-ing, just made up a verb, of all of their work to kind of lift it up and to aggregate it across all these efforts. And when you can create that storyline, then any one organization, whether it be Fathers Read, whether it be Treehouse Books, whether it be a small mom and pop early childhood center, they're part of something larger than themselves, which brings more momentum and energy to their work too, and they can attract other resources as a result, right? So, but it's hard sometimes, I think, for corporate philanthropy to see the value in funding this kind of intermediary that isn't the direct service. You know, why wouldn't we just put our money toward getting more books out the door?
Well, and I think actually this ties perfectly into a topic I want to touch on, which is around impact. And I think maybe, AJ, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think part of the drive or the motivation for companies to get close to that impact is to be able to, you know, be a part of the halo or maybe even claim some of that impact, right? And I think that it's easier to measure, it's easier mm-hmm. to tell the story, it's easier to prove that these investments are making a change because it feels more direct. I'd be curious if you were to hypothesize why it is that organizations do that. I'd be curious about your perspectives on that.
Yeah, do you want
to? I think you named it. It's just easier and faster to be able to go to kind of the end outcome of how many books were distributed, how many kids were tutored. But, you know, the big impact that Read by Fourth has had after 10 years is strengthening the early literacy ecosystem. So when there are big hiccups like a pandemic, we bounce back faster because we have strong social fabric and we've put things in place that allow our community to be even more resilient. We talked about Philadelphia being gritty and resilient. We're even more resilient now in the early literacy space as a result. And, you know, sure, our kids lost ground in the pandemic just like every city in this country. However, it was found in a study done by Stanford and Harvard that Philadelphia's recovery post-pandemic in reading was the second fastest of any major city in the country. Wow. And if you know our schools, you wouldn't have guessed that, you know, but we are. And I would say that's because of the way the partners here are working together, have a plan in place, and have strengthened the ecosystem as a result of investments from Vanguard and things like a backbone.
Yeah. And I would say, look, there is a place and campaigns like this for everyone. Like, not everyone's going to be willing to or needs to. They should, but fund a backbone organization. But you do need that, right? Because you heard some great example of how you, to support the whole ecosystem, you need someone to drive that work and be able to lift up and measure impact at a higher level. But you also need folks to support these individual organizations and to purchase books or to send volunteers out to read to kids to inspire them in local classrooms. So all of it's important. Yep. But I think the point here is that without the strong backbone support organization that's well-funded and staffed, you can't sustain these long-term social impact campaigns effectively. Right. So all of it's important.
I'm really getting the system level change theme here. Right? Like, this is the how.
Right. Well, and I think what you were saying, I thought you were going to head in a different direction here, but Philadelphia, for whatever reason, has had trouble attracting national funders. So creating a sense of momentum and possibility is important to get their attention and say, oh, if we should be funding education efforts in Philadelphia, they've got it going on. Those partners know what they're doing. They're connected. They already have some proof points. But we can't do that without creating that level of energy and momentum.
So let's dive into the impact of the initiative. I think you started to kind of hint at a little bit of it, Jenny, but I'd love to hear from both of you. Jenny, let's start from your perspective. You know, what would you say the impact of the initiative has been so far?
So if you don't mind, I'm going to back up for a second. We haven't really talked about like how a child learns to read, because I think you really have to understand that to understand where there's been impact.
Let's do it.
Right. So, you know, we talk about third grade reading and being proficient as a reader, but you have to break that down. And there's something called the simple view of reading. For a child to be a proficient reader, they really need two primary skills. They need to decode the words on the page. The simple example that we all know is kind of C-A-T adds up to be cat. But you also have to know what a cat is. You have to know that cat's a furry, domesticated animal that most people like, unless they make you sneeze, whatever, right? But you have to understand the meaning. So you need to understand meaning, you need to be able to decode. And there are multiple skills that go into developing each one of those skills. And they really start at birth. So when we say it's more than a school issue, sure, in school, you need to learn your letters, the names of the letters, the shapes, the sounds. You have to also learn vocabulary. You have to learn how to put meaning together. But a kid needs to start at the very beginning of their life being exposed to ideas, being taken around and having experiences being read to, so that their background knowledge is greater. There's an incredible example of a standardized test where a child is asked to talk about you know, understand the concept of a tadpole turning into a frog as part of being able to make sense of a paragraph. Now, if you're growing up in North Philadelphia, nowhere near a pond, the chance that you have ever had someone talk to you about what a tadpole is, and now you're not going to be a proficient reader because you don't have those concepts, right? So there's all these skills that go into that. As a result, when Read by Fourth looks at making sure children can learn how to read, we're looking at what are we doing to empower families to be the best and first teachers. We're looking at how can we transform our communities so that all throughout Philadelphia, there are what we call learning landscapes that are catalyzing everyday moments and changing them into learning opportunities. And then we're also looking at our public systems, the early childhood centers and the schools and the rec centers and the libraries, and making sure that we are doing everything we can in those systems, following the best research, so that those services are right. So we've got strategies in all those buckets. So when we talk about impact, we're looking at how are we changing the way future teachers are trained to teach reading when they are at their universities. And we now have the highest percentage of teacher preparation programs of any region in the country that is preparing teachers aligned to something called the science of reading. That's impact. We're looking at making sure families have books in homes. Sure, we've given away millions of books across our partner network, but what we've really done is ask partners to look at what types of books they're giving away, which neighborhoods they are. Can we make sure that we're not giving half of that million in one neighborhood of Philadelphia and other neighborhoods not getting any? So our impact is helping partners think about how they distribute books in a more equitable way. We are working with libraries and school system to make sure when there's a new curriculum in the school system, the libraries have on their shelves all the books that relate to that curriculum. That's impact. And that's what I mean when we're talking about, you know, how is our ecosystem stronger? Impact. We've recruited and trained nearly 1,000 individuals to be reading captains to represent their blocks and their communities and being able to tell their neighbors what it takes to raise a reader. That's impact. We've created a citywide festival called Reading Promise Week that celebrates the assets in communities and kind of flips the story away from being the largest poor city in America to being the largest city in America that actually cares about early literacy in every corner of this neighborhood, of its city.
That's incredible.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. Right. You
can, so, and that was only like half, that was the first half things that could come off my mind. I didn't bring my list.
Right. You keep going. No, but what you heard, there's some systemic change, supporting the ecosystem, the work at the grassroots level. We talked about the neighborhood literacy fund driven by individuals in local neighborhoods. We talked about reading captains like in local neighborhoods. Like you need all that. I'd also say too, just kind of lifting up, is that because this campaign is tied to a national effort, that a lot of the best practices you're hearing today around partnership and impact and bringing all this together has also been a model for other cities.
Yeah.
Like we have the pleasure at Vanguard to also fund a similar campaign in Charlotte called Charlotte Reads. And I know you work closely with
Monroe, who leads Charlotte Reads.
Yeah, so it's just
my second call after
share and learn. You know, obviously there's uniqueness to every city, but there's also consistent themes and learnings and best practices that could and need to be scaled across cities and across the country. And I think Jenny's done a good job, not just here in the city of Philadelphia, but also being a key thought leader and inspiring others. You know, they're maybe in the earlier stages of this work. To share, again, learn from what we've done here effectively and apply it in different places. So it has this like ripple multiplier effect that we've seen. And I guess a funder is something you hope to do. The other thing I'd say too that's unique that we take a lot of pride in at Vanguard is this sustained multi-sector approach that we've really seen over time. The business community, you know, corporate funders, traditional philanthropy, folks at the grassroots level coming together to drive impact over a long period of time. Like a lot of us have been involved in collective impact efforts that it come in, you know, they're somewhat short-lived. And then all of a sudden another issue comes up and it's like, okay, yeah, the literacy thing is important, but we're going to focus on X, Y, and Z. It's been the opposite. It feels like it's been this like positive juggernaut.
When I was interviewing with this job, you all were saying, this is going to be 10 years. We're in and out in 10 years. And you're going to solve the problem in 10 years. I said, I'm not.
Yeah. Well, I think
you hired me anyway.
I think that vulnerability and that, because I'll tell you, the other folk, I'll tell everyone else, well, oh, yes, I will find a way to address this issue. And that's just not, these issues are deep rooted. Yeah. Poverty, you know, they're complex, they're generational.
Totally.
But you can make huge progress.
And we
have made progress. And it inspires also other campaigns that are, you know, outside of early literacy to what works well to create a effective ecosystem around an issue. So I think the work has driven great results around early literacy, but some of those, again, those learnings have also informed other things we've done in the city to drive impact in other areas as well.
Yeah. And you talk about Charlotte Monroe, who leads the work in Charlotte, and I are on the phone all the time sharing ideas back and forth. They have an incredible training program with parents on really getting parents to read with their children and kind of change culture around night bedtime stories. And we're talking to them right now about what that looks like. They also have a really cool tutoring program where you can train a volunteer to be a really effective tutor. And we need more tutors in the city. So we're trying to get under the hood and understand what it would take to bring that here. In the meantime, Charlotte's looking at our Reading Captains program and could they bring that to Charlotte? We also have a really interesting program here called the Philly ABCs to really increase how rising kindergartners understand their alphabet knowledge before they hit kindergarten. We've got 6 or 7 communities that are reaching out to us right now, Charlotte being one of them, to learn about that. I'm holding a little kind of private webinar with them in a couple of weeks so we can share that. So it is fun to be part of those national networks. And I think when you get a big company like Vanguard that has other funding regions, it helps us connect nationally with partners across the country and learn from them.
Yeah, you can cross-pollinate the learnings and successes, which is
right.
Really, really cool. AJ, I would love to hear, like, how would, you know, you're accountable for the investments, the social investments that Vanguard makes. I'm curious, from your perspective, what impact, would you describe for Vanguard?
Yeah, so there is a lot of accountability. I think I mentioned earlier that our foundation board, as an example, is a subset of our most senior leaders in the company. And when we talk about, one thing about Vanguard, we're very data and analytics driven on all aspects, including how we measure results in the community. So we have a scorecard, you know, and it's literally, we look at a lot of the indicators that Jenny talked about. We look at how we're showing up from a relationship-based perspective, talking to our grantees and getting feedback and surveys, and all that is discussed in meetings. So I think we're accountable internally in really good ways to make sure that we have our eyes focused on the things that are gonna drive the most impact. And if we need to make deeper investments in certain areas, we're willing to do that. And that's the commitment we have because we're a mission-driven organization. I'd also say too, as you know, Sona, that from a business perspective, that it also, inspires employees, right? All the research shows that when companies invest in communities where employees, and we call them crew, live and work, there is a connection to having more pride in the company. We're actually trying to measure that. This is something we'll come back another time and talk about the pride survey. Anecdotally, we know that to be true. And again, there's connections to around people wanting to stay longer at an organization. We're really pleased and happy that we have, this year we'll probably exceed 70% of our employees involved in either giving or volunteering.
Wow, that's impressive. If you don't mind me saying.
Over two-thirds, and every year we kind of incrementally go more. So some of that is just says a lot about the company and how mission-driven it is. Some of that is intentional in how we set up our matching dollars for employees. So, for example, Strong Start for Kids, which focuses on early childhood education, our signature program, we do a dollar-for-dollar match, unlimited. So we literally have people, they want to give, if you want to give, you know, $250,000, and we've had that and more, we will match that. So in addition to the company dollars we put into the program. So we're invested in this issue as a company, but then we also want to encourage our employees who are inspired to be involved as well. And of course, there's other issues that our employees are passionate about. We also do some lower level kind of matching of 50% match up to $10,000. So you have to do that as a company to incentivize. One, it starts with being authentically caring about the community and involved, but then there's ways you can incentivize more involvement and then tell that story. Mm-hmm. And so I've, again, I think from an impact perspective, we've seen great results. From an employee engagement perspective, we've seen amazing results. And it's very much part of the, I think, the fabric of the company and the mission.
Yeah, if I can boast on your behalf for a moment, Vanguard and AJ, I think we look at the data at Benevity. We can see the benchmarking, and you are best in class on so many metrics. And it doesn't surprise me now, actually, having had this conversation just around the ethos, the values, the mission alignment, like it all makes sense. And yes, you're more likely to attract people. We've looked at Vanguard's data. You do retain more people who engage in these programs. That is common. We see that across all of our clients. But I think the other piece is it builds your culture, and it continues that culture of, you know, community engagement and focus. And so it's not only you're attracting people, you're attracting the right people to your organization. I think we talked a lot about the successes. I'd love to hear, were there any learnings or mistakes or things you had to pivot? You know, like a lot of us learn from failure really well. Would love to learn from your failure if there was any.
I'm reframing your question again. I apologize. But I think, you know, from a nonprofit standpoint, one of the hardest things about funding is that each funder has their own set of metrics that they want you to respond to. And we at Read by Fourth, given how broad the work is, touching families and communities and systems and kids from birth to age 9, we got to a point where we literally were counting 186 different metrics and trying to track them for about 15 different funders total. They were all over the map. And again, this was before AJ's time, but I think it was the culture of Vanguard that allowed this conversation to happen. We went to Vanguard and said, as we did to some other funders too, we can't do this. We need to be able to aggregate those metrics down to a more manageable number that you all will be okay with. And how can we find some commonalities? You know, I would love a common reporting application. That we're not quite there yet, but we were able to get Vanguard to agree to kind of accept some metrics from other funders, and then they helped us massage them to fit in their system. And that was huge. When you've got a staff of 5 trying to track the work across a whole city that is trying to impact about 220,000 children and their families, we needed the ability to kind of be better at how we told the story and be more efficient with it. And we needed the funder to not be the block to that. And they really stepped up and helped us figure that out.
Yeah, no, a great, great example. I think for us, it's being able to pivot, you know, having, yeah, you can have the ways that you want to measure impact, but if it's creating challenges for the organization, you have to be able to pivot and be flexible. You know, we talked about employee volunteerism. I think sometimes too, I think of some of the smaller organizations and how there's so much enthusiasm. And so it, you do have to work on the timing and sequencing and not have it. There were times I know when I joined, and I see this actually as a good issue that you can solve for, where you had multiple touch points of various of parts of the organization that heard about the certain groups and reached out, or they're part of a group within Vanguard to volunteer. That's a good thing, but it's a lot of on the capacity on the receiving end. So we've had to really look at that and say, how do we better keep the enthusiasm level up? Again, when you have 70% of your employees involved and actively involved, that's great. But doing it in a way that's going to really serve the best interests of our communities. So it's just a slight pivot, but in general, it's something I think a lot of companies have to deal with. But it's much better, I think, than the opposite, where you're pulling teeth to get people to go out and right. support and volunteer. That's not the case at all, given the mission-driven nature of the company.
Yeah, no, good problem is exactly the right the right word to characterize it. So I'm thinking, I mean, we've heard a lot from you. This has been incredibly rich. And so I just want to first thank you for your willingness to share so openly and to speak so openly and eloquently, frankly, about the relationship. I'd love to ask what advice you would give to other change leaders, whether they're in the corporate sector or in the nonprofit sector or anywhere in the ecosystem, who want to be able to generate the incredible relationship dynamic, but the positive outcomes that have, been generated from that relationship. What would be your advice, or what would be, the words that you would want to share?
Yeah, I think, you've heard this, the theme throughout. It's long-term investment, multi-year. It's taken a humble listening and learning posture first. It's funding at the grass tops level and the ecosystem and backbones, particularly for complex collective impact approaches, but also be willing to fund at the local level, at the neighborhood level, that's maybe somewhat non-traditional for corporate philanthropy, and just sticking with it. It takes time, and even if you as an organization pivot and you can't, but you're in there long enough where you can have that impact multiplier effect, where it is philanthropy in the right places driving impact. It is employee volunteerism and skills-based volunteerism. It is the social capital. Keep going back to that, leveraging relationships with clients and other funders. All those things are important, especially for, again, a multi-sector approach like the Read by Fourth campaign to drive long-term sustained impact.
Yeah, and I would just add that trust-based philanthropy is a buzzword these days, but that trust is based on relationships. So I would say making sure that you are actively working on building that relationship at a personal level, and for the corporate funder to be looking for those opportunities to invite and bring the nonprofit leader to these social, yes, they're business events, whatever the fundraising event is with the table here and there. But those social moments are also times to build your relationship and get to know each other outside of the reporting requirement schedule. So that not only opens the door, but it helps create those moments to build relationship. And I think that's just critical. And then for the nonprofit leader to not be afraid to really advocate for what the needs are on the ground. I mean, you heard AJ say that you've got to listen. Well, we've got to be able to be, trust ourselves to be vulnerable and share what we need to have get done, and realize we're in a partnership with Vanguard for Vanguard to meet its goals and for us to meet our goals. And that only works if we're honest and open.
Yeah, sage wisdom here. I think I'm just struck by the concept of long term and depth of relationships. And I think we talked about this being, this isn't going to be in 10 years, right? It is generational change. And so, kudos to you and all of the organizations that are part of this, this ecosystem and this coalition and focusing on it. It comes back to what you mentioned at the very beginning, AJ, around economic mobility. All of this is geared towards, hopefully raising Philadelphia's, for example, off the, out of 50, out of 50, moving them up the ranks.
Yeah.
And I trust that with this kind of relationship and with this with this example that we can get there.
We do too.
Absolutely.